Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for September the 9th, 2019. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. We have lots of news of interest for you tonight, but first, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Good evening, David, and good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing out there? Before we get to the show, I want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show. It's your show, veterans, so please take the time to pick up the phone and give us a call. Let us know what's going on in your state of the VA, and you might have some interesting issues that you might want to address with David and myself. Lord knows we've seen it all, and I'm sure we've not seen it all. So give us a call. And that number, by the way, which covers the United States, is 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. And I can't stress enough how important it is for you veterans to chime in. You know, I see all sorts of stuff on Facebook. There's a Camp Lejeune water contamination site with about 12,000 veterans on that site. And there's all sorts of other sites for veterans to share their feelings. Well, this is another vehicle for you, the Veterans News Hour, to pick up the phone and give us a call. Back to you, David.
Well, thanks, Richard. I know we have a lot of news tonight. I wanted to start off with kind of a follow-up on an issue we talked a lot about over the last year and a half, which is for those veterans and their families that are dealing with disability compensation claims and appeals with the VA. You know, in February this year, the so-called Appeals Modernization Act fully went into effect. It had been in kind of a trial interim implementation for the prior year and a half, ever since it had been enacted into law in August of 2017. Now we're seeing, the program as it's actually in being used. And I had a hearing this past Friday. It was a Board of Veterans Appeals hearing. It was a video conference hearing, which means that the veteran and myself, his lawyer, were physically at the St. Petersburg, Florida regional office, and the judge was in Washington, D.C. at the Board of Veterans Appeals headquarters, and we were able to see each other through large screened video conferencing. So that's not a new development. The VA has been using video conferencing for years. That's not new to the appeals modernization. But one thing that struck me at the beginning of the hearing was, you know, the judge mentioned that that the hearing time we were going to be given was 30 minutes, which, Richard, you can share your experience too. I think it's been our experience over quite a few years that typically the judges would give us up to an hour. Now, some judges might be in a hurry, and you could feel they're kind of like pressuring you to kind of wrap things up if they thought they'd heard enough. But wasn't your experience, Richard, you know, usually we get about an hour with these BVA judges?
Absolutely. Not only would you get an hour, but there was no clock. Sounds like what they're telling you is you're now on a clock.
Well, yeah, and it was 30 minutes, and I went back checking.
But let me ask you this. You know, I'm a big sports guy, you know, so I know all about, you know, the clocks. You know, football players have 24 seconds to get the ball off and, you know, snap the ball.
So yeah.
Is there a timekeeper?
well, I'll have to tell you. The judge at the beginning announced that we had 30 minutes, but with my argumentative nature during hearings, we actually were in there for about 45 minutes.
Was there a penalty? Was there a penalty?
There were no penalties. At least we don't have the decision yet either. I could be finding that in a year from now, but. like I say, one thing that was new about this hearing was that the judge announced we've got 30 minutes. That seems to be a change. And I asked the judge about that. I said, well, that's that seems to be a new rule. And the judge's answer was, well, the BVA has just been going in with, you know, with that and using that as a, you know, as a way to try to cut back on their backlog of hearing requests. Well, the obvious lesson for veterans and their advocates is you better realize some judges are going to be pretty tough on that 30 minutes, and you better have your case in writing, which has been Richard Hurley and my practice anyway, that we put everything in writing. We had the veterans' testimony reduced to writing and a detailed statement, and as well as our legal memorandum, any other evidence we have, which is whether it's a medical opinion, whether it's medical records, whether it's a medical nexus opinion or a disability benefit questionnaire or personnel record, whatever it is. But the other thing I want to mention about you know, this new appeals modernization now that's implemented is that you know, a veteran, when their initial claim has been denied or they've been issued a rating that they think is too low, they now have three choices. They can file a supplemental claim, or they can ask for a higher level review, which is not the BVA appeal. I'll get to that next. But the higher level review is a fresh look by a more experienced claims adjudicator, but you don't have any right to submit additional evidence. You don't have a right to a hearing. It's basically the reviewer looking at what's already in the record. The veteran or the representative can request a one-time informal telephone conference, which is not the same thing as a live hearing. You can't present new evidence, really. It might be an opportunity for the advocate to try to tie things together. But then the third option is the appeal to the Board of Veterans' Appeals. And even in that lane, that appeal to the board lane, you still have three choices. You can ask for what they call a direct review if you have no new evidence, no additional evidence, and you don't want to have a hearing. Now, that should be the fastest. And, you know, keep in mind, part of this appeal modernization was supposed to enable the VA to render faster decisions. Well, faster compared to what? Taking years? But under this new system, if you're appealing to the board, you can ask for a direct review with no hearing, no new evidence. Your other option is to, you don't have a hearing, but you can submit additional evidence. But you have to do so, and this is really important, you have to submit that new evidence within 90 days of filing your notice of disagreement and appeal to the board request. So you've got 3 months. So if you're going to need more than 3 months, either because you're having problems getting something from a doctor or developing other evidence that you might need, then you may have no choice but to go with a third choice, which is to ask for a hearing. With the hearing route, you get a hearing, as I just mentioned. You may only get 30 minutes with the judge, but you also have the opportunity to present the evidence, not only at the hearing, but up to 90 days after the hearing. Now, here's my advice, which is if you're going to want that extra 90 days, make sure you remind the judge of that at the hearing. Now, it's unlikely they're going to make a decision within 90 days, but having said that, I did have a case a couple months ago with the BVA hearing in June, in May, where they made a decision in June. Fastest decision I ever saw, and it was favorable for the veteran. So just be aware of that. And the other thing you need to be aware of at the BVA hearing where you're submitting new evidence, or if you're waiving a hearing and you're just submitting new evidence within 90 days of your notice of disagreement, is be sure to include with your written submissions that you're waiving regional office consideration of that new evidence. Because if you don't, the VA may not point that out to you, but if you don't waive regional office consideration, you know what the BVA is going to do? They're automatically, without even addressing the merits of your appeal, they're going to kick it back. The word is remand. They'll send the whole thing back to the regional office for a new decision. And guess what, folks? That's the same regional office, or perhaps a different regional office, but it's still at the regional office level, with a really good chance of rubber stamping what already happened. So my thought, and Richard, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this as well, would be it seems to me that, you know, more often than not, it would make sense to waive regional office consideration, and then and just go ahead and ask the BVA to make a decision based on what you're going to get or what you're submitting then. What are your thoughts, Richard?
Well, first, I think you're absolutely correct about the waiving the regional office action because, you know, this becomes a ping pong match, you know, back and forth. And, you know, when we got veterans who are in their mid to late 70s and higher and even older, they don't have time for the ping pong match. They want to get a case. They want a decision. They want a decision now. No. And I'm digressing just a bit, and I'll get back to the topic. You know, these veterans want a decision now because in a lot of cases they've got a spouse. And so it's important for them to be service-connected prior. They want to be service-connected prior to passing away. And some of you out there may think, well, how often does that happen? Well, I can tell you this year so far, it's happened to me 6 times. Veteran has been in hospice and literally hanging on, waiting for the decision. And finally, the decision comes in, and believe it or not, within 2 weeks, the veteran passes away. But he passed away knowing that his wife will now be entitled to certain pensions. But getting back to the hearings, I agree with you about the higher review at the VA level. And I'm saying this to you based upon inside information that I get from a couple of decision review officers, one in St. Pete, there's another one in Maine, there's one in Portland, and there's another one in Birmingham, who've all said, don't ever take that route because it's just a waste of time. It's just more delay. Do the supplemental claim at 0995 filing. Submit some new evidence if you've got it, but you should have it in order to do that. And then if you don't, just go right to the BVA because that higher review is just a waste of time. Now, getting into this hearing stuff, your situation, Dave, is very interesting. And I'm off on Wednesday. I'm going to Winston-Salem for a hearing, so I'm waiting to see what's going to happen there. I came back 2 weeks ago from a hearing in Denver, and I can tell you that was not the case. We had a hearing for at least 75 minutes.
Wow.
And the judge was great. He asked a lot of questions of my client because he really wanted to get into the issues about his ankle conditions and his knee conditions. And the judge was, I was really impressed by his knowledge of limbs. And he really got into asking the veteran a lot of questions. So we sat there for quite a while. Not once did it come up about a 30-minute time limit. That wasn't even the first time I'm hearing about it is tonight with you, David. I don't know if this was your experience, David, but during my hearing, I had someone, a staffer, come in and constantly bring us coffee and water during the hearing. I was waiting
for
the donut.
That must be Denver, Colorado hospitality, because that's not St. Petersburg hospitality, I can tell you that.
I was waiting for the donuts, but there were no donuts. But they did bring some nice coffee and asked if we wanted anything else. And it was very interesting. I know the judge was, in that case, the judge was really miffed when I told him the trouble I'm having with the C-files and getting C-files from the VA. And, you know, he rolled his eyes and he said, look, I'll do what I can and I'm going to enter my order right now for the VA to immediately get out a C-file to you. Well, that I don't have it yet and we'll see. You know, I know in years past when I've talked to people over at the St. Pete Regional Office and they talk about the BVA, they kind of just blow them off and roll their eyes and say, they have no idea what goes on down here. I'll get to this case when I'm good and ready. And that's in response to me telling them, you know, in that judge's order, you're compelled to expedite the case because of whatever reason. And when I bring that up and highlight that to the people at St. Pete, they blow me off and say, well, tell the judge to come down here and he can work the case himself. Which goes to another total separate issue about just the fact that you've got people down in the St. Pete Regional Office blowing off federal judges. I mean, back in my day when I appeared in front of federal courts up in New Jersey and New York, you took those orders seriously, and if you ever blew off a federal judge, you're going to be held in contempt. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen down in St. Pete. And one final note that I just found out about from in preparation for my hearing in Winston-Salem, and I got this directly from the coordinator up in D.C. about who works for the BVA, they're now going to teleconferencing. BVA hearings are now going to go to teleconferencing. And I'm not sure if it's in response to my complaints over the last 2 years about veterans in the state of Florida who live in from, you know, 2-3 hours north of here up to, can be up to 6-7 hours to St. Pete. And they're just physically unable to get to St. Pete. And so instead of having their hearing, which they're entitled to, they go ahead and they waive it because it's physically too demanding. And the person I talked to said, well, that they had been getting complaints like that quite a while. And so this new teleconferencing is going to basically work where you can have the conference in the lawyer's office with the veteran there, or you can actually go to the veteran's home. And the lawyer and the veteran can sit in the veteran's living room, and you can have the conference on the computer with the judge in D.C., just like you did in St. Pete, obviously on a smaller screen. But they're doing this in order to accommodate a lot of those veterans who are unable to travel. You've got a lot of veterans out west who live in extremely rural areas, a lot more so than the state of Florida, who are just unable to get to these regional offices. And in some states, there might be one regional office for the whole state. For instance, in Alabama, Birmingham, you got to go to Birmingham. So, there are some new developments when it comes to the BVA, and it, other than this time limit gig that they seem to be pushing, sounds as though they are trying to accommodate veterans to give them the opportunity for these hearings.
Well, if I could add something about something that hasn't changed yet has been, as you know, when a regional office like St. Petersburg is hosting the BVA hearings, they may have those periodically on a particular day. It's been their practice, in my experience, and that continued with the hearing last week, where they will schedule a whole group of veterans for either a morning or an afternoon time slot. And the time slot starts at 8:30, and they may schedule a half a dozen veterans. And you have to be there at 8:30, and actually, you really have to be there beforehand, so that you're ready to go. Because you don't know if you're going to be the first one called or the sixth one called. As it turned out, the hearing I had on this past Friday, the judge started the hearings at 8:30, and the veteran I was representing, we were called at 10:30. So we were waiting 2 hours from the start time, but actually we'd been waiting much longer because we had been there before 7:30 just to be there and to do our final, just review of what we were going to present. But my conclusion about this whole subject of BVA appeals is that, I expect that probably more of these BVA judges are going to be going to this 30-minute approach. Maybe not all of them, but this judge certainly made it sound like that's what they're doing, they're going to be doing. But I see these hearings as not being all that useful anymore. They used to be more useful because, as you know, before the Appeals Modernization Act, the BVA had a duty to assist. And as part of that duty to assist, you can make an argument to the judge that, we asked for the judge's assistance based on that statutory and regulatory duty to assist to help us identify anything that might be an obstacle to the claim being granted. Well, that duty to assist no longer exists. The only thing relevant to a duty to assist is that the BVA may note any errors in the duty to assist at the regional office level. But, again, I don't see a whole lot of benefit from these hearings in the future, provided that the veteran and his or her representative have put into writing the legal arguments, all the evidence, statement by the veteran, other statements, other evidence, and have that that package completed, and do so within 90 days after filing of the notice of disagreement with the board. So that's kind of my thought.
No, David.
Of course, case by case, you have to look at things case by case. I'm not trying to give legal advice over the phone for all veterans, but it's something, it's the direction I think I would be heading. What are your thoughts, Richard?
Well, I think my takeaway at this point, and, you know, for me personally, I've been practicing law for 35 years, as you have, and I've been involved in a lot of big criminal cases and stuff like that, and civil cases, and it's always about preparation. You win the case by preparing. You don't win the case. This isn't Perry Mason. You don't walk into court and, you know, something comes out of the ceiling like, oh, my God, you know. No, you win the case by preparing. And with these BVA cases, I see that as even more important. I mean, I've been told that some representatives have gone in with their vets, and they're not really prepared. They're just there to kind of handhold the veteran, and they kind of let the judge run the show, which is fine. But if you don't have your own legal memorandum done and your own supporting documents done, I see that as could be a disservice to the veteran. So for us, David, this is old hat. We do this no matter what. But if there is a lesson out there, I think, you know, nowadays, if they are putting everyone on a 30-minute time clock, you better really be ready to go, be prepared. You don't know what's going to happen. You may walk in there and you may not hit the 30 minutes, like you got 45 minutes last week. But if that's the future, then preparation is even more important than it's ever been.
Well, I also realize the importance of, you know, this veteran that I represent last week, having the benefit of an attorney rather than, as you described, Richard, a lot of these veteran service officers, and I've seen this from reading transcripts that they've done in cases of veterans that I've represented who hired me or hired our law firm but had previously had a BVA hearing, and a lot of these veteran service officers do exactly what this judge at my Friday hearing was kind of expecting, which is back and forth volleying questions, you know, with the veteran service officer asking questions and the veteran often struggling to put together complete sentences, let alone paragraphs, keeping in mind that very few people are used to testifying under oath in front of a judge, even an administrative law judge. They get nervous, and a lot of these veterans have memory issues to begin with. They've got there's a lot of reasons why their testimony is going to sound like scrambled eggs. It's not going to sound like a very coherent stream of information, which is why, you know, Richard, you and I will work with the veteran to put a very detailed self-explanatory, you know, often 4, 5, 6 pages or even longer statement, which covers everything. Because I guarantee you, the way this judge was going when she started interrupting my presentation was she was expecting that, and it would not have been a thorough presentation. It absolutely would not have been. And furthermore, it would have skipped all the legal arguments, which really were going to make the difference in this particular case. It wasn't going to be the veteran's testimony as much as pointing out the errors in the regional office's decision. So in any event, I think these are all reasons that, you know, that you've mentioned, Richard. I agree with you about the higher level review lane under this new thing seems pretty much like a waste of time, at least in most cases. So that means go directly to the board, and then the question is, do you want a hearing or not? If you skip the hearing, you'll get a faster decision. It doesn't mean fast, though. I just mean faster than if you ask for a hearing. And one thing that that I had the veteran I was representing ask the judge at the end of the hearing, I said to the veteran, I said, ask the judge at the end, I said, when can we expect a decision? the judge absolutely would not be pinned down, even to a time frame, even to say, well, you'll probably get in 6 months. Nothing. It was, I can't tell you. Can't tell you. We'll just make a decision as soon as we can. Well, keep in mind, this is a case where the veteran had filed initial claims in 2010 and supplemental claims in 2013. We were appealing initial negative decisions from the years 2012 and 2014, and here we are well into 2019, and we finally got a hearing on this. And what could happen is maybe we'll get the judge's decision in a month, 2 months, but it might be a year. There's no telling. We're at the mercy of that. And one thing that I'm continually reminded with the VA, including these BVA judges, is a lot of these government employees, you know, they're getting paid no matter what they do with their time. And they have very little respect for people's time, for the veterans' time or advocates' time. They just don't. And it's consistent with the way they schedule these hearings. I mean, if they know they're only going to allow 30 minutes or even an hour, they ought to schedule them an hour apart or 30 minutes apart instead of saying, okay, you've got six or eight veterans, you all come in the morning, and then we'll somehow decide who's going to go in what order. So it's really disrespectful of people's time. And as you said earlier, Richard, I mean, the state of Florida, Florida's a pretty large state geographically. And, you know, veterans could be traveling many hours to get to St. Petersburg. And so they have to get there super early. And almost always these hearings are in the morning. Very rarely they're in the afternoon. So it means veterans having to travel and their advocates having to travel very early in the morning to make sure they're there in time. And then to be told, well, you're just going to have to wait a few hours. It's just government bureaucracy. It just shows people in the government they realize the power they have, and it's going to be their way. So it's very unfortunate. But anyway, on a positive note, preparation. Get yourself a good lawyer. Dig into the case. Prepare your case, and aggressively pursue it. So, Richard, before we go to any news, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I should add too is that when you get to the BVA, I think you should feel optimistic. I think most of the time the BVA tends to come down on the side of the veteran, and you may not get all the relief you're looking for, but you're going to get a lot of it, and you're going to stay in the game. And your case will probably be remanded back for further development, which unfortunately means more time with the VA. But at least your case is still pending and still going forward. Because ultimately you are going to be successful, and you know you're going to get the compensation that you deserve. You're going to get your retro payment, and you're going to get your monthly payment going forward. You know, the BVA judges, you know, they can think outside the box. The people at the VA do not think out of the box. In fact, David and I've had experiences where the examiner down at the VA says, "Well, you're probably correct. You're probably going to win this, but I'd rather have you go to the BVA as opposed to letting me make the decision." The first time I heard that one, I almost fell on the floor. I couldn't believe that, you know, this woman actually said that in front of the veteran, which, you know, what that translates to is, I'm not going to do it. It's going to take you another year and a half, 2 years, but you're probably going to win. Well, you know, does this veteran have another year and a half, 2 years to live? You know, that kind.
And really, it's what we're talking about. At least historically, it's been often 3 or 4 years to get a BVA hearing, as it was in the case I had on Friday. I mean, we were appealing decisions made in 2012 and 2014. The VA Form 9 had been filed in 2016, so we were about 3 years after the VA Form 9 had filed just to get a hearing. And now we don't even know when a decision will be made. It could be another 6 months or a year before we get a decision on this case. I agree with you, Richard, about being optimistic. I don't want to discourage in any way veterans from appealing to the BVA, because they will get a fairer decision, a more thorough evaluation of their case by far at the BVA than they will in most regional offices, certainly the St. Petersburg, Florida regional office. But in any event, you know, it's something to think about. And let me give you a website for anyone listening that wants to read more about the BVA. It's easy to remember. It's BVA for Board of Veterans Appeals. It's BVA.VA.gov. They have contact information, toll-free number you can call to check on the status of your case. They have frequently asked questions and answers there. So it's a useful resource. So it's good stuff, and good luck at your hearing this week, Richard,
thanks,
in North
Dave.
Carolina. So well, we have a lot of news tonight. So, Richard, why don't you start us with some news?
Yeah, attention Vietnam War Purple Heart recipients. Veterans of Foreign Wars, the VFW, is now accepting entries for its annual Return to Vietnam trip drawing. If you received a Purple Heart for being wounded in Vietnam, you could be one of nine veterans to win this in-country tour from April 16th to the 29th, 2020. The trip will include visits to Hanoi, Saigon, formerly Ho Chi Minh City, the DMZ, Kaesong, Hue, Da Nang, Hoi An, Marble Mountain, Chu Chi, and Tay Ninh, with airfare, accommodations, and meals included. Entries must be received prior to the drawing on November 29, 2019. Winners will be notified by mail or email immediately after the drawing. To claim their trip, winners must send a copy of their Purple Heart documentation to VFW National Headquarters by January 3, 2020, and their passport by February 7, 2020. If you do not have a passport, please apply immediately upon notification that you are a trip winner and that your Purple Heart has been documented. The trip includes mainly Vietnamese meals, but also will include American food on occasion, long bus rides, excessive walking, and there are no handicap facilities anywhere on the trip. Everyone must participate in every inland trip and activity. Please consider these points of information before entering the drawing. Previous VFW sponsored trip winners to various events are not eligible. Don't miss this opportunity to revisit battle sites and share your experiences with fellow Vietnam veterans. For more information or to download the entry form from VFW.org, and look for the link under the Media and Events tab on that website. Entry forms should be mailed to the Adjutant General, Attention Vietnam Trip, VFW National Headquarters, 406 West 34th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, 64111. Again, the Adjutant General, Attention Vietnam Trip, VFW National Headquarters, 406 West 34th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, 64111. And we'll do that one more time before we go off the air tonight. Back to you, David.
Yeah, that's a great opportunity for Purple Heart recipients of the Vietnam War. If they want to go back to Vietnam, enroll, and they may be one of the nine winners of this VFW-sponsored trip. One of our guests on our show, who was on our show twice, Brian Wizard, a Vietnam veteran, a door gunner on helicopter, the smoke ships. He went back to Vietnam, not part of the VFW program, but he went back to Vietnam about 30 years after the war, and he actually brought his video camera and put together a video. If anyone's interested, contact me, and I'll get you a copy of it. But he actually put a film together, and it was really important and useful to him and sort of therapeutic after the heavy combat that he saw in the year over there, to go back 30 years later and how much he really enjoyed meeting the Vietnamese people. And from a promoting of peace perspective, how much he got out of it, and realizing, you know, the importance of trying to build friendships between countries, and all the things that we had in common. So I encourage Vietnam veterans, and this is for Purple Heart recipients, to check that out, the VFW's program. And you can find out more on their website, vfw.org. Look under the link for Media and Events, that tab, and you'll find information about this. We got other news of interest to Vietnam War veterans and their families. According to a September 5th press release, that's from last week, the United States Senate Veteran Affairs Committee, that press release stated as follows, that the ranking member of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, Senator John Tester, led six of his Senate colleagues in a letter to the VA Secretary Robert Wilkie, urging the department to take action on behalf of thousands of veterans across the country living with chronic health conditions by expanding the VA's list of medical conditions associated with exposure to Agent Orange, which was used in Vietnam. Now, in their letter, the senators detail the lack of movement or progress by the VA in adding health-related outcomes to the presumptive list, to the current presumptive list for herbicide exposure. The senators also pushed the VA to follow through on VA's self-imposed deadlines, as proposed in a letter sent by Senator Wilkie at the beginning of this year, 2019. According to that letter, which was signed by Senators Brown of Ohio, Blumenthal of Connecticut, Murray of Washington State, Sanders of Vermont, Manchin of West Virginia, and Hirono from Hawaii, the letter said, and I quote, "Mr. Secretary, thousands of veterans, many of whom are aging and in urgent need of critical health care and other benefits, have waited far too long for a final decision that should have been made by the VA in 2016. We therefore urge you to add Parkinsonism, bladder cancer, hypertension, and hyperthyroidism to the list of presumptive health outcomes for service-connected exposure to Agent Orange without further delay," and unquote. Now, currently, as most veterans know and most Vietnam veterans know, the VA, by law, provides certain presumptions for certain medical conditions. And presumptions for some of those health outcomes for which the National Academy of Medicine has found a suggestive association between herbicide and a particular medical condition. Four of those, which I just mentioned, Parkinsonism, bladder cancer, hypertension, and hyperthyroidism, they have yet to be recognized by the VA. In fact, hypertension is now recognized by the National Academy of Medicine as having positive association or an even stronger link, in other words, with herbicide exposure. A presumption of exposure would simply mean that if a veteran served in Vietnam, then the VA will presume that they were exposed to the harmful chemicals or environmental hazards, and their condition would be service-connected for disability compensation purposes. The senators also called into question the department's delay in adding Parkinsonism to the list of conditions. As the letter said, quote, "It seems arbitrary to make a distinction between Parkinson's disease, which is already on the list, and Parkinsonism, as both severely affect the health and quality of life for veterans. We owe it to our veterans to lift the burden of proving their symptoms are the nexus for service-connected herbicide exposure," unquote. Now, earlier this year, President Trump signed the bipartisan Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act into law, which was a historic and long overdue legislative step, which actually followed the Procopio court decision earlier this year, to ensure that more Vietnam veterans living with the effects of exposure to Agent Orange receive the benefits of the care they've earned. Now, this law extends presumption of Agent Orange exposure to more veterans who served in or near also the Korean Demilitarized Zone, and provides the benefits to children of Vietnam veterans who served in Thailand and were born with spina bifida. So there's more news. We'll have to see what the VA does. But here we are, you know, 50 years after the high points of the Vietnam War, the worst of the Vietnam War, and Vietnam veterans are still fighting with the VA over some of these issues. So over to you, Richard.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the sad thing about that, David, is while it's good that there's progress, you know, in the Blue Water vets and stuff like that, the sad thing is that a lot of veterans have died before any of this came their way. And not only were they deprived of this compensation and the benefits that they should have been entitled to, serving their country, but their families were deprived as well. And you and I both know when we've resolved cases for veterans and they've gotten a healthy retro check, how that can, you know, just change a veteran's life. You know, it doesn't mean they're going to run off and buy a second home or buy a boat or a new car, although in one case he did buy a new car. But, you know, they're able to function better. I was telling my sister the other day, one of my clients just got about 6-7 months ago, he got a check. It was a healthy check for him, and he paid off his mortgage, and his daughter is in his pre-med at the University of Florida, and he paid off her loans, and she's not going to have any debt at all coming out of college or for med school.
Wow.
And what a great thing when you think about it, you know. And he got this money, and now his daughter is, you know, hopefully she's going to, and I know her, I'm guaranteed she's going to become a very good doctor. And think of all the good things that she's going to be able to do as a doctor, and not be saddled with you know, loans and debt for med school. You know, and I tell veterans all the time, you know, even if you, you know, when they're saying, I don't want to go through the hassle of, you know, the whole VA and trying to get compensated. And I said, well, look, you know, you just do it. Get the money. You don't know what you could end up doing with that money, and you can make a difference. So in any event, I just wanted to share that because I thought that was pretty cool that the father, and he's an Iraqi veteran. He was a medic in Iraq, and what he was doing with his retro payment. More news. According to a September 5th, 2019 press release, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs will award $30 million under the new grant and per diem GPD program, October 1st, 2019, to 128 organizations to provide wraparound supportive services to veterans who were previously homeless or at risk of losing their house. GPD case management grants improve housing retention among formerly homeless veterans by providing an array of individualized services that promote housing stability. When veterans transition from homelessness to permanent housing, some may need help readjusting to the routine and responsibilities of managing their household affairs, said VA Secretary Robert Wilkie. The case management grants announced today will help ensure that formerly homeless veterans have the tools to remain in stable housing and successfully reintegrate back into their communities. The GPD Case Management Grant Program Fund, community organizations that provide these veterans with resources, referrals, and services, such as home visits, to monitor their tenant responsibilities. This can include help with managing finances, using public transportation, planning meals, and more. The grants were open to applications from organizations in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. A list of guarantees is available at va.gov/homeless/GPD.ASP. Again, va.gov/homeless/GPD.ASP. On the same topic of veteran homelessness, a September 4th press release announced that the U.S. Department of Labor, DOL, U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, VA, and U.S. Intra-Agency Council on Homelessness, USICH, collaborated in August to successfully roll out the recently expanded Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program, HVRP, which will help more than 18,000 homeless and at-risk veterans secure meaningful employment and stable housing. HVRP grants in excess of $48 million were awarded to 149 community organizations serving more veterans than ever before. In order to stay securely housed, most Americans, including veterans, need employment to support themselves and their families, said VA Secretary Robert Wilkie. VA, DOL, USICH, and our community partners are dedicated to helping homeless and at-risk veterans access job opportunities that aid them in exiting or avoiding homelessness. The recent legislation expands program eligibility to include veterans who, upon enrollment in HVRP, were homeless at any point during their preceding 60 days but have found housing, veterans participating in the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, VA Supportive Housing, HUD-VASH program, Tribal HUD-VASH or VA Supportive Services for Veteran Families program, veterans who are receiving assistance under the Native American Housing Assistance and Self-Determination Act of 1996, veterans who are incarcerated or who are transitioning from incarceration. Through HRVP, eligible veterans receive employment training, transportation, professional clothing, apprenticeship opportunities, on-the-job training, as well as job search and placement assistance. VA can also help these veterans access medical care and permanent housing through a partnership with HUD. To learn more about VA homeless programs office, visit va.gov/homeless. And back to you, David.
All right. According in other news of interest, according to an August 21st press release from the Department of Education, quote, President Trump signed a presidential memorandum on August the 21st, 2019, that will significantly streamline the process to erase federal student loan debt for totally and permanently disabled veterans. Through a process called the Total and Permanent Disability, that's TPD discharge, veterans will now have their student loan debt discharged unless they decide to opt out of the process. The department anticipates notifying more than 25,000 eligible veterans and continuing the discharge process on a quarterly basis. The memorandum that was issued on August 21st builds on improvements to the TPD discharge process that was implemented by U.S. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos and the U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs Robert Wilkie. In April 2018, the Education Department established a data matching process with the VA to identify totally and permanently disabled veterans who are eligible for student loan relief. Since April 2018, this process has resulted in Secretary DeVos providing more than $650 million in student loan relief to more than 22,000 eligible veterans. According to Secretary DeVos, quote, supporting and caring for those who have sacrificed much in service to our country is a priority for President Trump and the entire administration. I appreciate the President's strong leadership on this issue and his willingness to provide much-needed student loan relief. We will continue to prioritize the needs of our nation's veterans and provide them the help and support they have earned and deserved, unquote. Now, veterans will still have the right to weigh their option and decline loan discharge within 60 days of notification of their eligibility. Veterans may elect to decline relief either because of potential tax liability in some states or because receiving loan relief could make it more difficult to take future student loans. Eligible veterans who do not opt out of the program will have their remaining student loan balance discharged and will be reimbursed for payments made following the date of the discharge, of their disability discharge. Excuse me. Now, we've just got about 8 minutes left in the show. I want to cover one more thing, then I'll turn it back over to you, Rick. In an August 23rd, 2019 press release from the organization known as the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, addressing the student loan issue, the IAVA CEO Jeremy Butler said, and I quote, the President's directive will provide welcome and much-needed relief to thousands of wounded warriors struggling to make ends meet under mountains of growing student loan debt. This executive action is a critical step in the right direction to ensure that veterans who have sacrificed so much in service of this country have the tools to transition back to civilian life with meaningful education and career opportunities without carrying a crushing, insurmountable financial burden. We urge Congress to take the next step to protect veterans seeking higher education, and that is close the so-called 90/10 loophole that allows unscrupulous educational institutions to exploit and defraud veterans and their families out of their hard-earned education benefits. Veterans who have served bravely should be empowered to access a quality higher education and fulfilling career. It's time our government removes any obstacles in their path to independence and success, unquote. The IAVA supports legislation sponsored by U.S. Senators Johnny Isaacson and Jack Reed and U.S. Representatives Connor Lamb and Brian Fitzpatrick to automatically waive student loan debt for fully disabled veterans. Many veterans are being taken advantage of by a loophole in federal law known as the 90/10 rule, which allows schools to deceptively recruit veterans, service members, and their families to enroll in poor educational programs at exorbitant costs. Congress passed the 90/10 rule in 1998 as part of the Higher Education Act, which placed a cap on the amount of money institutions could receive from federal funds at 90%. But funds from VA educational benefits, which include GI Bill dollars and DOD tuition assistance, do not count as part of this 90%, thus creating the loophole which some of these schools were exploiting. So that's something, another issue to follow. But for the most part, for veterans that are totally and permanently disabled, this issue of student loan discharge is an important one. So got about 5 more minutes left. Rich, over to you.
Thank you. And, a lot of times we focus on the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, but remember that every state and countless local governments have their own departments or other organizations which help veterans. And quite frankly, I've found in my experience dealing with veterans over the last 7 years that in most of the cases, the local communities and local veteran organizations, county organizations, almost do a better job. They're more hands-on. The veteran feels like he's not necessarily a number. And, you know, there's not a lot of bureaucracy. And, you know, so you should definitely, you know, check your local, your state and then your local county level. You know, in the state of Florida, we have the FloridaVets.org. It is the Florida Department of Veteran Affairs, but then the website's FloridaVets.org. And if you are in Florida, employment opportunities are publicized on that Florida website. Current postings include the following. Employ Florida Vets. Employ Florida Vets is the state's online jobs portal to provide employment services to Florida veterans. The initiative helps match service members to the jobs and training opportunities that suit the skills and experience gained in the military. Visit Employ Florida Vets website, veteran.employflorida.com. Again, that's veteran.employflorida.com. More information or call toll-free at 866-352-2345. Also, there's the health license fee waivers for veterans and their spouses. Florida Department of Health has programs in place to aid veterans in finding employment in health-related fields after they return home. The department offers expedited health care practitioner licensure through the Veterans Application for Licensure Online Resource, Valor System. The department also offers expanded licensure fee waivers for military veterans and their spouses applying for health care licensure in Florida. The department continues to assist county health departments in recruiting military veterans and their spouses to work in health-related fields. If you are a member of the U.S. Armed Forces, Armed Services, are planning to leave the military within the next 60 months or were honorably discharged within the past 60 months, the Florida Department of Health may be able to help you find more employment. For more job opportunities, visit peoplefirst.myflorida.com. For more information, call 850-488-0595 or visit www.floridahealth.gov/licensing-regulation/arm-forces-index.html. Call 850-488-0595. Anyway, that just gives you everyone an example of what goes on in the state of Florida and in the local communities. So reach out for those in your own neck of the woods. Before we close tonight, I would like to provide our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about an important VA program called Coaching in the Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching in the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. The toll-free number is 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. I was going to give you that address again for the trip to Vietnam. It's the Adjutant General Attention Vietnam Trip, VFW National Headquarters, 406 West 34th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, 64111. Back to you, David.
Yep, and the website is vfw.org, and then look for their link under the Media and Events tab for more information about the Vietnam trip, which will be next year. Well, it's about time for us to go. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group. Also like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We hope you'll tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time, here on bbsradio.com, Station 1, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Hope you'll tune in next week. Until then, have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.